It's always so much work.
So much work. Oh, I mean,
You know
so
how I feel
much.
about
You know,
work.
I mean, honestly,
You know how I feel about
how
it
many
is
of these
fun.
episodes have you edited?
That was not in our contract description, my friend. I'm
Okay.
doing what I was supposed to do.
Contract description, yeah, which is just like look pretty. Okay. All right. Well, I
Well, I
guess
mean, you
I
gotta go with what you know.
Oh man, it's gonna be all right.
It's Tuesday,
It is Tuesday, which you always say is the most productive day of the week.
I do say that because it is. Now, not that the other days aren't productive, but it's important to like wake up and realize how much you get done on a Tuesday. Although you know what? I didn't get a lot done today. You want to know why?
Oh, I bet you're gonna tell me whether I want to hear it or not.
I will certainly tell you because I think people can relate to this. I had to change my password. I only had 8 days left of my school password. So I changed my password.
Which means that you had 8 days left of the old password. Why would you change? I always wait till the very last day.
Well, I was like, I'm going to be productive today. This is going to be on my list. I'm going to cross it off my list. So here I am changing my password, and I was like, blah, blah, blah. I feel really good. And then I go to my Google Drive, and I'm like, ooh, I got to change the password I got to know the password for this because it all switched over. And I immediately forgot the new password that I did. So
What?
I then of course,
What is this amateur hour?
honest to
What?
God, it was ridiculous that A, I didn't write it down, but B, anyway, I hit like three times with the school stuff and they're like the credentials aren't right, like you don't have enough characters or whatever,
Well,
blah, blah, blah.
yeah,
Okay.
don't
So
even
I
get
did
me
that
started
like
about, yeah.
three different times. And then so I'm like, okay, I'll just get the verification code and then I'll get this set right. Well, of course, you know how my phone doesn't and yours is the same, doesn't work in our offices.
I'm
Only
aware, yeah.
you only have a certain window of time for that stupid text message to come through with the numbers. So like I'm
Yep.
like trying to do this in between classes and all these, I'm just like, whatever. So I don't feel as I was as productive as I wanted to be today, just because like, I got to like third hour and I'm like, I can't log in anywhere to like the band room computer. And I'm like, kids, here's what the plan is for today. I'm like old
So
school, tell them what I was doing.
did you kind of feel like the computer network was excluding you?
I sure did. I did not feel
Well,
included at all with the technology today.
as luck may have it, we have a special guest on the episode this week, and
Yes.
he's going to talk all about inclusion so that you feel more welcome.
Well, I'll
How
tell you
does that
what, I
sound?
think it's fantastic because talking to this individual it does nothing but make me better, and I feel so supported and heard, and I'm ready to learn more and get better. Ugh, he's awesome.
So it's Racky,
Yes,
Dr.
Rocky,
Racky
Dr. Rocky
Diaz
Diaz.
from the MacPhail Center for Music in Minneapolis. And we've known him for almost 8 years now, and he's such a great resource. And yeah, he's just like he's a good dude, and we've had a chance to work with him on multiple occasions through MMEA. We've had him here in Farmington,
Couple
and
times, yeah.
yeah, it's been really great. And I'm excited for our interview. He's going to tell us a little bit about his background and what he does there at the MacPhail, and hopefully dispel with some of these notions that DEI is in some way controversial or political. He really comes at it from such a human understanding, and wants to meet educators where they are at on their journey, and
And
really has some good practical advice.
I just love having conversations with him because I don't ever feel like I'm being judged. I
Yep.
there's a level of acceptance of like you said, like where you're at in your journey. And when we're talking about education and to use his words about how archaic, and our district is that way too. Like, yeah, the education system in the United States was created for the teaching the kids how to work in the factories and go sit down in the same spots and do all these things and da 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 and to be able to grow and have that a different perspective, especially for those of us that have been doing this for a very long time. We have some growth to do, but if your community's not quite on board, or you know, it just there's just a level of you feel good about yourself when you're talking to Rocky, and you're motivated to sit down and have some personal reflection and insight. And I love talking to him, and I can't encourage people enough to bring him into conversations.
Yeah. You know what else I can't encourage people to do enough?
Like and share
us on social media tell their friends about our podcast. Because I mean, you know, this show is about everything. It's why we say call it Band is Everything. And, you know, it used to be Band in Minnesota, but we're so much bigger than that now.
Well, I mean, I heard that we've got listeners in Spain now. It's incredible.
We're everywhere.
Everywhere.
Though I suppose us playing our own podcast while we're in Spain doesn't quite count, but our friend Nacho assures us that he does listen to us across the pond.
Rocio said she listened to us as well.
Yes. So. Oh, we now, love Ro. Rocio is the best.
Yeah. What a great trip. And I can't wait to actually talk about podcast about touring and
oh yeah, that's gonna be our next episode.
So valuable. I mean, it's yeah, like I need to like sit down and still have some reflection time, but yeah. You know what I'm not used to? You and I, especially when we podcast together, we do it face to face. We're not
usually in the same room.
We're not in the same room this time, but
no, we're not.
I just have to say my Botox looks amazing.
It does. Okay.
Doesn't it look like, look at my forehead. Really does that move? It looks so good. I highly recommend. That's a different podcast day.
Do you want to lean in? I can take a screenshot of that. Your forehead compared to my forehead. Okay, there we go. Okay. All right. Well, I think we need
let's
to
kick this
interview.
Off with Rocky and just enjoy, folks, and have an open mind and just listen. It's he's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. So we're going to take a really quick break here. And when we come back, we will have our interview with Dr. Rocky Diaz of the McPhail Center for Music.
Welcome back to the podcast that's all about band and not about band at all. Because in this rehearsal space, everyone has a seat, whether you play an instrument or not.
The doctor is in the house.
Doctor
Diaz.
¿Cómo está?
¿Cómo está? Bien.
Muy bien, y tú?
Muy bien.
I am tired, but good.
Okay. All right. Well, why are you tired? Why are you tired? It's a Tuesday afternoon. Aaron tells me all the time that Tuesday is the most productive day of the week. Is that because you've worked that hard already today that you are tired?
You know... Yeah, I think it's the mixture of everything I do. And so I'm just like, but it's a good tired. I think that's what it is. I always make sure by the time I'm kind of clocking out of work, that I always look back, was I productive today? Did I get the outcomes I was looking for kind of thing? So yeah. So it's all goodness.
Awesome.
I love that. Well, and you know, like that's kind of a perfect way to start because, What we're going to talk about today is you and all of the things that you do, because I think there's a lot of people in the state of Minnesota. There's a lot of music educators in not just Minnesota, but nationwide, mm-hmm. because we are not just a Minnesota podcast.
I mean, people listen to us.
for better or worse, whether
it might be...
education or entertainment.
Yeah, they might be listening in Spain. I don't know.
They
could
might
be. You're kind of a big deal.
We can't wait to kind of dig into a little bit more about who you are and the things that you do, because I think they're really important. And I've had a chance, and I know Aaron has had a chance over the last few years to get to know you better. And we've had the privilege of bringing you in to you know, talk to and work with. Well, you've gotten involved in MMEA and with folks in our school district, and we just want to spread the word about like what it is that you do and all the things that you are, because you also, well, I was going to say you're kind of new to Minnesota, but you're not anymore. You've been here a while.
I know. Almost, I moved here in 2016.
Okay. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell us, give us the background, give us the Cliff's Notes on who you are, how you ended up in Minnesota, and the things that you are really passionate about just as a person first, before we get into like the work stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. This is, I enjoy the podcast a lot, especially the morning routines episode. Well, I was like that.
Yeah.
I definitely was resonating with like totally. If I'm off my routine, forget it. So yeah. So thank you for that.
Good.
So Cliff Notes version. Okay. Let's see. I'll try to be short on this. I was born in Puerto Rico. I'm an Army brat. So my father was in the Army before he retired. We ended up in North Carolina. So North Carolina is kind of my home. I grew up in Eastern North Carolina, and music is in our blood. My father's a Spanish guitarist, classical guitarist. His father and all his brothers and sisters, they all sing. So it's just naturally a cultural thing. I have an older brother who is a phenomenal artist, not just musician, just artist, 4 years older. And so he played, when he was in band, he was a trumpet player. And so I used to, anytime we were growing up, I used to grab his trumpet when he wasn't around, and I would blow on it and stuff. And instead of like reprimanding me and spanking me or something, he would give me lessons. He'd be like, why don't you try this or that? I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know. So that's how I picked up the bug, even though in North Carolina, we started music in middle school, so sixth grade. So I wanted to play the saxophone. I thought it was cool, you know, gets all of the ladies, I thought. If not bad, drums. But, and that was, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, it was Hall & Oates, Maneater, saxophone solo. I'm like, oh, I want to be that person that plays the saxophone.
Yes, I approve.
Yeah. And that didn't work out. My dad was like, well, we got a trumpet here. Your brother's not playing it. So just you play that. I'm like, okay. But I picked it up just really quickly, and I found it fun. A fun story is that I didn't know how to read music till end of high school. Everything I learned was by ear. And so my teacher was either my brother would give me some kind of tips and tricks, or I would watch the TV and just play along with Star Trek or cartoons, and whatever I heard, just play back and forth. So same thing in band class. So whatever my teacher would play, I would just copy or listen to it a couple times, and boom, got it. So that was kind of my crossway into like improvisation. So band was part of my background. Got into high school, grew up in a big marching band area. So that was huge. I mean, it's still huge. So I got the marching band bug. Then I got the drum corps bug. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of marching band experience. Ended up marching a local drum corps there, a Division II drum corps called Tar Heel Sun, that opened into, I went to march the Blue Knights. Out of Denver. The reason I chose there is because they gave me a scholarship. So that was awesome. And so I aged out there in 2001. And during that time, I was enrolled at East Carolina University studying music education in Greenville, North Carolina. And I knew education was one pathway I wanted to choose, but also I also wanted to perform and get that kind of experience. So I was lucky that when I was marching Blue Knights, I had a lot of colleagues. They went off and did this thing called BLAST. And I was like, BLAST? Yeah, what is that? And I remember them talking about it. It's so cool. We got to go to London. And in my head, I'm like, you got to march around and still on a bus? They're like, no. It's like a Broadway show. Like, I don't know what that means. So basically, they kind of put the bug in my ear and recruited me for their next iteration in 2002. So while I was doing my studies at East Carolina, I was not really happy because I wanted to, I was getting my education background, but I wanted to perform still. So I still had that bug, like, I want to do something more. So they came calling, like, do you want to do this Blast 2 show in Disney World called Shockwave? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? And so anyways, that opened up my performance career. I moved down to Florida, took some time off my university studies, ended up doing a huge, almost 15, 20-year performance career span. I started in Blast, got to live in London, got to do some tours of Japan. Then I moved into like the Broadway circuit, doing that kind of thing. And then, playing with other people, I got to chance to perform with Josh Groban. So like all these things got to open
Wow.
up. So while I was doing that, I kept on noticing that the audience base was definitely not reflective of my background as a Puerto Rican. And so I started like slowly contextualizing like the diversity, equity, inclusion lens of like, what does this mean? I didn't know, I didn't have that language at all. And then I also noticed a lot of stuff I learned practically on the road I didn't have in my education courses. So like, huh, this is interesting. And so, and when I wasn't performing, I would be studying. So I would do things in and out like that, or arranging music for marching bands. So it was roughly around, gosh, 2008 to 2010 when I decided like, okay, I want to, I'm gonna go back to school, finish everything, and see if I could help change the system of music education to kind of make it more equitable. So that kind of really spawned into where I ended up now. I kept on just getting more tools, just being more, getting more research in my background, stuff I never thought about that I would be doing. I thought I would be playing trumpet, traveling, and performing.
Yeah.
But that, that perspective of not being reflective on stage, not being reflective in the audience, started really getting to me in a way of like, why? I just kept asking why. Like a little kid goes like, why? But why? But why? That turned into me. So like, it became quite annoying. But my colleagues like, why don't you study it? Why don't you learn how to, do it? And you talk about it so much. So that's what kind of fueled my my passion. And then, long story short, that was the reason why I relocated to the Twin Cities in 2016. It was to study a PhD program. And at the time, the former school director at the University of Minnesota was asking about doing some kind of curriculum change and undergraduate change, and it really lined up with what I was searching for. And I got into there right at the right time and was able to learn and be able to use my voice, my platform, learn how to use it. And so embedded to the university, and then that opened into 2 years later getting a job at MacPhail Center for Music as the director of school partnerships. And that all started opening up with this, I had this big equity focus on everything I was doing with the music ed. And then I was writing my dissertation at the same time, around 2018, 2019, then boom, pandemic. And then boom, racial reckoning, murder of George Floyd. Everything was happening. Everything was coming to this, like, oh, it's all here. And I couldn't like not talk about it. So then I did this whole shift, like, okay, I'm going to talk about this. At the same time, I had the whole like, well, who am I? Who is this person to talk about it in this music ed space? It all came together. And I was very fortunate to have support and resources to help me get everything out of this neural spicy brain of mine onto paper and to do the work and to really embed into the community. And this has been, it's been challenging, but I use challenge as not a dirty word. I'm sure you all have heard me say that before, and it's not impossible. But so that's kind of like the short story of how I got here and how I really want to push that narrative forward and be intentional about the work.
That's so great. And like, when you think about your background and everything that like it brings us to where we're supposed to be, I think, like we never always know our path of where we're supposed to go or what we want to do from time to time. We just things just kind of evolve into that. And I think that it's so great to hear just like an authentic story about like where you come from and where you are and where you're going. So this is cool. This is really cool.
Well, and I think,
Thanks.
yeah, and also like, it really shows that the only agenda that you have is that, it's your own lived experience and the fact that you want the circles that you run in and the things that you're passionate about to be
Connected,
accessible,
yeah.
yeah, to more people. And I was thinking about how to phrase this next question, but I'm just going to kind of dive in here. I can you help me to understand why something like DEI has become political? And I think there's a lot of people who think that somehow Working in the world of DEI means that you have some sort of agenda. And I mean, we know the value of living and working in a diverse world. I mean, we exist in a diverse world, and equity is everyone should have equal opportunities. And inclusion, I mean, we all want to be included. Can you speak a little bit more to what DEI means to you and the work that you do, and maybe dispel some of these notions that it's in somehow in inherently antisocial or political?
Sure. I mean, that's a phenomenal question. The biggest thing about DEI, and it's, I mean, we've had it in so much different, we think of historical perspectives. And if you go to like the reverse timeline of where it all started, anything from affirmative action, civil rights, all these things were like DEI language. And then being super intentional about DEI really just in the past 4 or 5 years. Look at us 4 years ago, or how we were all, we were in the lockdown. We were stuck at home with our thoughts, our feelings. We wanted to see that change. We had a lot of awareness happening. And now 4 years later, it's very polarized. And a lot of that ties politically with what's happening in our politics. And that's part of the natural progression. You get that kind of polar us versus them mantra mentality. But for me, I think the approach for me, the way I do it, is with a lot of cultural sensitivity. So you hear that phrase, meet them where they're at. And for me, it's like as a practitioner, once I got what I didn't want to do was just lead this work or do this work all through my lived experience, because I knew that would burn me out and that would just be taxing. I wanted to have the skill set on it, because I didn't want to be, almost lived experience kind of like trauma porn of like dumping this information on somebody. I want it to resonate and meet the educator where they're at or where they're not at, and have a conversation and establish that relationship, cultivate that relationship. But also knowing that the individual might not be ready for this journey, but always keeping the door open. Like, okay, if you're not ready, there's a disconnect in our communication. Okay. And that, finding that space, a lot of times you don't see that. Like, well, you don't get it, forget it. I'm going to counsel you. And how well is that working out?
Yeah,
So
right.
there's got to be
So
that kind
true.
of, that historical perspective of like, we weren't taught to think about that. We are ingrained into the system, especially, our education system is archaic, but that was a system we were taught into. And the heck, I have conversations with my 9-year-old son about when I grew up in North Carolina. If we made a mistake, we got paddled till about third grade. That was illegal in
Wow.
the South, right?
That was like one generation ago. Yeah, that
Yeah,
is not,
I know.
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're making, and now it's slow progress, but it's progress. And for me, I'd like to find those small wins and amplify and talk about that. I mean, I have again, I was. I use my son for reference because my son is 9, and so he still corrects me on pronouns, and it's phenomenal because in my background I don't talk about it or contextualize it. Plus, being Hispanic, Spanish is my first language. It's a language that's gendered, and to get the day, like, what are you talking about? So it's a whole different cultural shift. So I think finding the kind of sensitivity of what this is, and I think that the tricky part about DEI is that it's been so unregulated. A lot of practitioners, or a lot of people who are, advocates, want to focus on trends, like diversify repertoire or, neurodiversity. Like, yes, all those trends are important. We need those elements. But also we need to develop sensitivity and a kind of framework to make sure that we are being appropriate when we are, navigating those conversations with whatever specific audience it is. And that's hard. Especially for audiences, for administrators or teachers who weren't taught to think about that. And so it's like, you want somebody to have an awareness, they want to be an allyship, but also you need to give time for that capacity building. If not, everyone gets burnt out. And so we're seeing that kind of fatigue right now. And I think politically, people are hanging on to that fatigue and using that to, discriminate, push things, book banning, all these kind of things. So there's an agenda there. So how do you navigate those, those tricky waters there? But it's not impossible, but it's continuing to be able to drive the narrative forward, but give people. So a lot of my work, if not all, is through data. I'm just telling you what the data says. I know how to dispel it to whatever community I'm talking to. So it's not just, you know, oh, Rocky's just saying something. I'm saying something that I've researched on, or it's out there. So I just find those data points and I just bring them to the forefront.
I think that's so great because it takes the emotion out of it. And that's like you talked about the us versus them and everyone going into their corners. And that's purely emotional, right? That's brainstem level stuff. And like we're smarter than that, right?
Yeah. And yeah. I think too, being able to give that time and that space for communities. Every single community is different. And ready for things when they're ready for things. And like, you know, I always go back to the saying of like, our kids don't have time for us to catch up, right? They're with us right now. But in the same vein, there is some truth to the fact that like, there's certain things that you can do and you can ease into it. And, but as long as we are, especially as long as we are aware and growing ourselves and working towards it, I think that that's such a huge step. And again, like, I love what you're saying about it not being, this isn't a personal attack against so-and-so about right. whatever, you know, it's a mindset. It's a shift. It's a perspective awareness that I think is so valuable in, especially in education, you know, with teachers and like, hey, you know what? Kids, you're teaching me something yeah. that I didn't, like you said, it was, you know, it's ingrained in our system. It's like, oh, this is what we've always done because this is how I learned it. And now it's good to like take a step back and be like, oh, okay, I didn't think of it from that perspective. Thank you. And then that just teaches everybody else to start thinking that way too. So that's
yeah,
awesome.
Those are the, I call those access points, you know, understanding. It's tough, especially in, you know, when I think of music education, and we have this, you know, the master apprentice model that we were growing up on, and it's still there. But then you want to have the student-centered voice. Well, what does that look like teaching music education, especially when you want to hear, what if you have a classroom of 200 students? Are you going to hear every individual voice? No, because there's also, you know, you have an objective too, an agenda, and there's still that kind of model, you know, there's still that. So it's how to acknowledge the traditions that we have, and especially in the American music education system, but also develop that capacity to be able to evolve it and expand it in ways that benefit both sides of it. So it's instead of like, you know, dismantling, oh, down with the band, orchestra, choir, jazz band, like, well, no. I mean, and I say that as someone who was deeply ingrained into those systems, and I love those systems. Heck, I wanted to be a wind ensemble conductor in my undergrad, watching my conductor, and was like, I want to do that stuff. This is amazing, playing this rep. But also seeing the benefits of other sides too. So it's learning about that, and learning to ask questions, especially to have those questions with your administrators, because it's tricky because we're siloed into our own music program area, off in a corner. Oh, you know, music, they're doing their own thing. And it's, you have that intent at the beginning of the year. I see there's a lot of educators, oh, this is great, I want to do this. And after day one, you're underwater because you're like, oh, here goes school and everything else attached with it. And of course, because that's the system it's built on. So if there's ways to disrupt that, you know, to develop allyship awareness, to be able to teach asking questions, and then be able to say, okay, I'm going to ask this question, it's challenging. I'm going to give them some space, but I'm also going to still hold them accountable if they want to do this work, and be able to be a change agent that way. And I always say this too, that the tricky part is that you don't have to be about this work. You just can't say you are. This is my positionality statement. I'm just going to focus on this and do that. Like, okay. But be prepared for community members or admin or someone to challenge those who are not about it. So there's, you know, there's different ways to navigate these things. But I think where we're at now, 4 years later, there are so many more phenomenal advocates, activists, practitioners coming out and doing more things now. So I'm excited about that. We're still very embryonic across the whole arts sector, you know, arts education, you know, performance-based organizations, orchestras, operas, you know, you name it. We're still very new at what this looks like, but that's okay. That's part of this paradigm shift. So I'm, you know, just think where we're going to be in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like that immediate change is not necessarily something that can happen, and that, or that what has been that we've been doing is wrong. That's not the case. It's just like, again, going back to that growth and that thinking process of I can do different things and it's good for me to do different things. You know, you go back to that challenge. It's so important for us to challenge ourselves and challenge our thinking. That's how we grow is by doing those hard things.
Yeah, and it's a cult the cultural shift, right? I think the one thing, it's when we get older, there's a bit of loss in like critical thinking skills, because we're so we have our degrees, we have our specialty, we're focusing on this part, and to disrupt that's hard. That's hard when you're like, well, I've been doing this and this specific way that I was taught is pedagogy, this is what it's working. And then to bring in like, well, are you being equitable inclusive? Like, what do you mean? Like, of course, like kids love it. Like, well, are all the kids, you know, are you having a I don't use the word diverse, I use the word balanced representation. Is it a balanced representation in the classroom right now? Like, oh, I haven't thought about it that way. And I'll take somebody who says, I haven't thought about it. Great. There's a thought there to, so let's get you an aha moment with a light bulb. Now we can work on it. You know, versus like, no, I'm just gonna do it this way. Like, okay, then they're not ready for the journey. So yeah, just so really being intentional about that. And that's why having these kind of conversations, it's, you know, they're not hard conversations. They might be difficult at first to hear it, but it's just being able to listen to a different perspectives that are, you know, historically just not taught to.
And that's what, thank you for saying that, because these are, they don't have to be hard conversations. And I remember back in 2017 or 2018 when you and I first sat down for the first time, and we had a beer, and I wanted to bend your ear about, at that time, Aaron and I were really working on diversifying the repertoire that we teach. And you gave some really great advice and guidelines for helping us to develop our repertoire so that it represented a wider variety of composers and cultures and musical styles. But what I also remember you saying is what you just said, and I think this is so important. You said, I need you to look around your room and make sure, does that really represent your school and your community? And that's when we started talking about, wait a minute, maybe we need to provide instruments to kids who maybe otherwise don't have access to them. Now, maybe we need to be offering rock band class in addition to the traditional band, orchestra, choir. And we've had a little bit more time now. We've been working on this for 6 or 7 years, but I know there's a lot of directors out there, like you said, that are just sort of starting this process. And I want them to understand that not only are there experts out there like yourself who can help, guide that process, but to know that it will be done in a manageable way and without judgment, that there's little things that you can do that are meaningful that aren't just check boxes. Because I'll admit that at first I just wanted to be like, I need women composers and I need black and brown composers, and then my program is more diverse. And you did such a great job of holding my feet to the fire and making sure that I understood that it's more than just that.
You know, and check boxes, you know, that could be a start. Check
I was just
boxes,
gonna say that.
it could be a strong start, you know, and for somebody to come in like, you know, myself. All I would do is just challenge you, be like, well, great, you did this. Now, tell me more. Tell me why you're doing this.
That's just
And
it.
you know, it's so establishing your why and it being able to explore that deeper. Like, great. Now let's see how we can build from this. You know, I think about phases. Okay, so this is your phase one. You're looking at this. You're building these foundations. You know, by phase two, phase three, you've got this foundation set. Now you're building a system that has DEI and policies and practices embedded into this system. And that could take, I mean, it depends on the support you get from your school, your admin, your community, your students buy-in to really move that forward. But yeah, so the check boxes can be, it could be a good starting sign and the cost could be very detrimental if the person can't articulate the why. So I get that sometimes the clients like, we want you to come in and do a training. And I'm like, ooh, I don't do trainings. You know, I train my dog treats. I don't do that. You know,
We're not training people. Like,
exactly. It's exactly. So it's having that conversation. Like, okay, we're gonna have some conversations, and most likely, some of these things you've probably heard of. You're just not, you know, just having that awareness and capacity to like take that and think on it, like, oh, okay. And so that's why I like to say capacity building, and it takes time. And I think the other part is that there are going to be times where you step in it. You know, I've made all this progress, and then something happened, like, oh, we moved back. But the object is to, you know, how to continue to move on, and you just shorten the gap. But that's, you know, part of this work is that diversity, equity, inclusion, access, you know, social justice, anti-racism, is very reactive. We react to it professionally or personally or a mixture of both. It's, you know, and almost all that work is reactive. But when something reactive happens, how do you become proactive and create new initiatives so you can, you know, mend that and make sure that doesn't happen again, or be prepared to build? So a lot of my work is very reactive. Either I make fail or working with clients or schools on what's working, what's not working. But always going back to, why do you want to do this? You know, explain to me, or have you thought about that? And until you're starting to establish that why, the work hasn't begun. You know, so for an individual's journey, for their program, or, you know, their classroom, or for the school, I see the administrators all the time. So those are the ways of really pushing the narrative forward.
Looking for high-quality handmade bassoon reeds? ACDC Reeds has your back. ACDC Reeds is a one-woman bassoon reed workshop in Minnesota run by Ariel Detweiler.
Selling beginner reeds, advanced bassoon reeds, and contrabassoon reeds, ACDC Reeds are hailed by all levels of bassoonists for their even intonation, ease of response in all registers, and warm tone quality.
You'll also find bassoon-themed gifts in the shop, including greeting cards, stickers, artistic prints, and the ever-popular Blackwing bassoon pencil. Find ACDC Reeds at www.acdcreeds.com or at retailers like Midwest Musical Imports.
Try out ACDC Reeds today and let the reed do the work.
Do you dream of faraway places? Do you wish to see the world? So much of who we are is where we've been. Go discover new adventures. Create memories to last a lifetime. Grand Tours. Dream. Design. Discover.
Schmidt Music is your trusted resource for all things band and orchestra. Their team of instrument specialists are experts in their craft and happy to help with everything from guiding students as they select a step-up instrument, presenting master classes, and more. The specialty shops at Schmidt Music carry an extensive selection of instruments from the finest brands in the world for every level of player, all of which can be accessed through your local Schmidt Music store. From do-re-mis to symphonies, Schmidt Music has got you covered every step of the way.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about your dissertation? Okay.
Sure.
the first thing I want to do, like if people haven't don't know the title of your dissertation, it is called Decentering and Dismantling White Prominence in Music Education. Why should I not be threatened by that? As a white, I'm a white dude. I think a lot of, again, kind of related to the question I asked earlier about, I think some people, you know, if they react emotionally to some reading a title of a dissertation like that, just assumes that you're setting yourself up for some sort of combative sort of situation. Come, tell me more about that and what that means to you. And I know you use some really great case studies like the SPCO to evaluate the efficacy of some of these DEI programs in music.
You know, and I always give it I'm really big on descriptors and a positionality statement. Like, look, when I wrote that dissertation, that was when I got that data research, that was 2018, 2019. And you got to understand, when I was in the middle of my research study, you know, my self-identity was being challenged with everything happening, especially in 2020. So there's more raw, and dissertations, you know, that's like the first step for researchers getting into the academic world. So a lot of the stuff, you know, the joke with the teachers is that a good dissertation is a done dissertation. And, you know, I also wanted to make sure that I was imprinting, you know, who I was at that time and acknowledging that, but also that my voice and my platform and my experiences that has evolved from that. So I don't, you know, that kind of title, I use the term white prominence because I went back and forth for years on like white dominance, the white, you know, white supremacy culture. And what I wanted to do was soften the language in a way that made sense. And for me, prominent is something that is just, you know, something that's always there, consciously or unconsciously. And so almost like this giant umbrella term where racism, systemic racism, inequities, individual, all these things that, you know, stem from white supremacy culture and more are under here in different ways. And, you know, most of the time we're just not aware of it, especially in the arts, especially in music education. So that's kind of why I use that word to like just decenter that and this to dismantle moving forward. I think now if I redid it, I'd be more on just decentering for a while. I'm not sure. I have to think more about that. But yeah, it's definitely a, I would encourage anyone who wants to read it, because one of the things that makes my dissertation unique is that I have an arts-based approach towards it. So yes, I look at the SBCO and then I look at Augsburg University, two different institutions that have done a lot of strong work around DEI in the past 10, 20 years. Are they perfect? No, but they acknowledge they're not perfect. But I wanted to understand how they're talking about this and why, because a lot of studies you read, a lot of things about DEI is so negative that I was like, I want to know groups that are doing good work and amplify their good work and show that this can work. And these two institutions, I was in my backyard, like, oh, they're doing some great stuff, not getting enough acknowledgement. So that's the reason I chose that. Also, I wanted to be very creative on it. So the way I researched them is when I did my interview process with them, a lot of the comments were so rich, I didn't want to lose it. I want to be like, well, this is what I think they said, you know, from the author's perspective. So I decided to, I looked and researched what's the best way to capture. And I felt like when I was having these conversations, it was like a movie. And so I wondered, like, I wonder if I could turn all this into a giant screenplay. And I act like the narrator, like from like the old 80s Wonder Years TV show, like, here I am, you know, reading this. So I got, I found a research method and I got approval from the university. And if you go into like chapters, basically 4, 5, and 6, what I'm doing the data collection, it is a screenplay, like a movie of me and all these people from the SBCO or Augsburg. And the last, you know, it was like act 1, act 2 are the two institutions. And act 3 is like my epilogue of like me disseminating what I learned from it. So it's a different kind of way, but it's made for people who can just like sit around a table and read a screenplay. And there's some hard hitting stuff in there. But there's also some awareness and things of, you know, or lack of awareness. So it's really cool and different. So I asked, you know, for those, just check it out. It's I try to make it very digestible, readable. You know, I try to stay away from the academic jargon at times. So that's kind of just a snapshot of that dissertation. And, you know, the white prominence word is, it's mildly uncomfortable, but that's it.
All right. Well, definitely check it out if you are interested in this topic, and hopefully many of our listeners are. I want to switch gears just a little bit here. You started out talking about how your background was in music education and playing the trumpet. We had you down a couple of years ago to help us with the jazz festival. And that was a blast seeing you, because again, I got to know you more from the academic side. It's always fun to see that you still have chops and you still like to play. In the last couple of years, do you find yourself playing much? Do you get out and take part doing much adjudication, or are you purely ensconced in the academic world these days?
You know, that's a great question. I'm not really in the academic world per se. As I'm very active on LinkedIn. I do a lot of my I write very academically, but then I translate it to like more of a social media audience, so people can decipher it and make it very digestible in that sense. And a lot of the work I just share free resources because again, for me, I want to because I'm lucky I have a full time job and make fail doing this, so I'm very grateful that I can be able to find these different pathways for connection points. So I've come to a point now where I think. I think I'm pretty established in that aspect of the equity world, and doing that and not slowing down. That I, now I'm looking at, picking up the horn more now and performing. I mean, I have a huge performance background. Even when I first moved here, my first year, I was doing the studies, but also performing a lot in the Twin Cities. I got a lot of calls right away, and really it was a pandemic where something had to make a sacrifice. And my case is right back there. It's like, let me, I've spent a lot of time, got a lot of degrees on this thing. It will. So I pick it up now, maybe like every 3 or 4 days and takes about 10 minutes and it's still there. I mean, I play it a lot, so I don't, but I do a lot of adjudicating still, which I love. I mean, that part is my passion. So give me that kind of stuff there. And, I miss that part of, doing clinics and that aspect of it, but also know that the more I get the awareness out there, the more these, my performance education background will start betting more again to it. So it's just a different journey right now, but everything else will come back up and all come to that pathway.
All right. Well, we only have 2 minutes left. Aaron, do you have any final questions? Otherwise, I'll turn things over to Rocky for his final thoughts.
No, I think this has just been so enlightening again. And yeah, I mean, obviously, like thinking about how much we've been able to work with you, Rocky, has just been so great over the years. And I know we're going to say this again, but I encourage people to reach out and organizations to reach out and to work with y'all because it's the work that you're doing is so important. And it's so valuable for us to hear a different perspective.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us you got 30 seconds to plug McPhail, your primary employer, but McPhail does so many good things for music and music education. Why should teachers or schools who aren't currently connected with McPhail reach out to you or reach out to any of the other folks and the great services that they offer?
Yeah, I mean, definitely reach out. You can reach out to me or any of our program directors. We are a large institution that's supporting music education, but we've been very intentional really in the past probably 6, 7 years since I've been there to really turn that into a community, focused organization. Just the collaborations we've done in the past 2 years with MMEA shows how much we're truly embedding to the system. And so being a access point there for music educators and resources, and a lot of the stuff we offer is free. So that is something that we offer free, and then getting educators that don't have the capacity, so we can come help them getting all that stuff set up. So we try to make it more user and interface friendly, that aspect of things. A lot of conversations when I first started, like, well, we have it, they just don't come. I'm like, okay, well, so how do we address those gaps and those barriers? So we've been evolving. So it's been turning into a whole different kind of organization in the past 6, 7 years. So I'm excited to see where it goes in those aspects of it.
Awesome. Well, I wish we had more time, but we are down to just our last few seconds here. So we really do appreciate you talking with us today. I know we've been talking about this for almost a year. I'm glad we finally got you on here. And thank you again for everything that you do for music and music education.
Yes, well, thank you so much.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your voices. Y'all are like, the go-tos of really amplifying work across Minnesota and nationally. So I'm just excited to have this chance to continue our conversations.
Thank you, Rocky.
Hey.
You have a great day, and we'll let you know when this is going to drop.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right.
Thank you. You so
All right.
Good to see you.
Yep. You too.
All right. Bye.